Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining Ralph Pointer, What's Happening. And now we bring you Mr. Ralph Pointer. Mr. Pointer,
yes.
How are you tonight?
Well, I am fine, and sad to say I'm attending.
I'm doing well, thank you.
I'm sad to say I'm attending a meeting in Orange, New Jersey. That's outside of Newark, on issues that should have been solved and were solved 50 years ago. And it is very relevant because the meeting is about community control of schools as well as community control of police, because if you do not control your schools, you do not control your children. And no children, no people on the face of the planet have been willing to allow other people to educate their children as black people in America and the inner cities have allowed other people to control their education budget, which means jobs, and the education content, which means brains or the development or lack of development of our children. Now, in the big issue in East Orange, New Jersey, is that a teacher had her students write letters to Mumia Abu-Jamal, and that teacher was removed by the board. And I came to this meeting to remind people that approximately 50 years ago in New York City, as in most major cities in this country, you could not be a principal if you were a person of color. not even in the schools that were segregated into black schools. Well, we fought that and we won it. And this teacher who, this teacher took his students to hear a poet reading his poetry, and he was removed. And we gathered, we organized, and we went to that school. We fought, and we put that teacher back in the school. And that poet's name at the time was Leroy Jones, and the late Emira Baraka, who became the poet laureate of the state of New Jersey. And in New Jersey, they're about to make the same mistake again and force the people into the streets to have their will known, to make the board serve the interests of the people of the community. And so we are here fighting again the fight that we thought we won 50 years ago, and this is the problem with America. The fights that we fought 50 years ago, 100, 150 years ago, the issue maintains or remains the same. And I would be remiss not to talk about the April surrender of Lee to General Grant, the surrender at Appomattox. Now, a lot of people fought on the side of right to end slavery, to maintain the dominance of the North economically over the slave states. And one particular battle I would like to talk about, towards the end of the war, Grant's army was the north of Lee, Sherman's army was the south of Lee closing, and the only solution Lee could think of was to have to break out of the trap. And so they checked out the Union lines, and they found a weak spot in the line. And they moved to break out, and as they were about to break out, a reinforcement, I believe it was a reinforcement of black troops, I believe it was the Massachusetts troops, who charged and held that line, took heavy losses, but a letter from one of the white soldiers said he heard the troops coming double time. And as they passed by, the resolute expression on their faces was signal enough for the other soldiers that there would be no breakthrough that day. Indeed, the counterattack was stopped by these troops. And I say these troops in particular because these were the troops who had most to gain and most to lose with a victory by the South. Well, as we know, the victory was won by the southern or the northern soldiers. But in the victory, the beginning of the end for black people was laid when Grant decided that the troops that Lee had did not have to turn in their rifles. And but the troops who were not in that trap, the rest of the troops spread out through the South. 1 in 7 troops was supposedly, this was the formula, they wrote it down, 1 in 7 of the defeated Southern troops was allowed to take their guns home. And that was the beginning of the end for black people, and it has continued, because instead of the gray army in the South, we have the army of occupation, which we call the police, in every black community around the country. And they are there not as peace officers, but to oppress and occupy the black communities. And so what's happening today, what's happening is people throughout the country are saying lives matter in spite of the number of black people who have been killed at the hands of the police, who have been jailed at the hands of the injustice system. And as Lynn Stewart puts it very well, they move lynching from outside to inside, that is inside the courtrooms. People get lynched in the courtrooms and they get jailed just as surely as, and they die just as surely as if they had been lynched with a rope. And I'm talking about the outrageous sentences that black people receive, and political prisoners receive these sentences and die in jail. I call them death camps for political prisoners due to lack of medical care. And so we see we are in the same position that we were 150 years ago. And we have to be the ones who care. Now, there are examples of what lives matter. And recently, we know that the right of gay people, and I support the gay rights, their lives and their rights matter. They matter to the people who are involved. And when you saw some of the states pass laws that oppressed and opposed and took away the rights the gay people had been struggling for, but they cared. And how do we know they cared? Because they had economic sanctions of their own that brought governors to their knees in weeks, if not days. And here we are asking the question, do Black Lives Matter? And the question that has to be answered is, to who or to whom do Black Lives Matter? Do they matter enough for people to do something? We have the Reverend Pinckney, who had been doing something, and he was put in jail to serve 30 months to 120 months because he was fighting Whirlpool. And they tagged the injustice system, said that the date of two signatures of a recall petition had been changed. They didn't know who did it, but they know it benefited Reverend Pinckney's cause, and that was enough to have Reverend Pinckney put in jail. Now, anybody who's done petitions knows how outrageous it is. And Reverend Pinckney was boycotting Whirlpool. Now, does his life matter? Does any black life matter? We have to prove they matter to us, the people, the righteous people, those who are involved in a unity of purpose, a unity of purpose meaning justice for all. And if we can't boycott, if we can't come up with a method, if we can't stop voting for the Democratic Party, who is a part of our oppression, then black lives do not matter to us because they do not matter enough for us to do anything about it. So I'm going to leave it open, Mary. I'm sure the lines are lit up. And so let's have other people tune in, tell us something about their feelings of whether black lives matter. What happened at Appomattox? What was the result? Let's have other voices in on this issue. Mary?
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Pointer. I'm going to open up all the phone lines. If you keep the voices and the background noise down, then all the lines can remain open and Ralph Pointer can call your name. And we have a good many callers on the line, and we are very thankful that each of you tuned in to Ralph Pointer, What's Happening. I want you to know that you can email Ralph Pointer. You can email Ralph Pointer at Ralph Pointer, What's Happening, at gmail.com. Ralph Pointer, What's Happening, at gmail.com. Now, Mr. Porter, go right ahead and call your guest.
Lynn Stewart, I know, has to go to, she had a procedure today. She's suffering from cancer, and she stays awake just to be on this program. Other than this, she would be in bed. Lynn, are you awake?
I'm awake. You know, I sleep with my eyes open. We have to do that in this society.
Would you give us your take on the issues we have raised this evening?
Okay. Very, very enlightening. You know, we have to always look back at history, and we look forward to what's ahead. And if we don't start acting like Black Lives Matter, then they will answer our question, do Black Lives Matter, as they have answered it for the last 300 years by saying, no, they don't matter, you don't count. But I want to just give a short update on Mumia. Mumia continues to be in this limbo where he has yet to see a specialist for either the diabetes he is suffering from or for his skin condition. So they are still trying to get a specialist to get into that prison to be able to diagnose him and to be able to help us evaluate whether the treatment he's getting is appropriate. So that is the status of Mumia. They are trying to raise funds for his expenses and for the expenses of his family who must travel long distances to see him. But being in that jail every day and being in phone contact every night or every afternoon is crucial to keeping him alive. So if you have some spare change, please give it to Indiegogo. That is the people that are doing the fundraising for Mumia. And it is all important. If there is one political prisoner epitomizes all of the problems of aging political prisoners in prison, it is Mumia.
Thank you so much, Lynn. I hear the talk there. And could we have...
Ralph, I have more to say, though, Ralph. I have more,
you have more to say. I'm sorry. Continue.
Okay, I just wanted to congratulate Ralph once again. If anybody knows what kind of death camps the prisons are, Ralph does. He visited me there so frequently he had a chance to see for himself the deterioration of some of the other women in that visiting room over the months and years. And we were in Washington this past weekend, and some of my closest friends still believe that I didn't have cancer that was active when I went to prison, and how did it resurface again? But because I dislike conspiracy theories, even though they are sometimes true, I am not going to dignify that theory, but I'm going to say that I keep trying to fight this good fight, and I will fight it because it just I have so much to do, I cannot abandon it. So for all the people in the metropolitan area, I just want to make two reminders of things that are coming up. On Thursday, the 16th of April, Jaleel Montcalm, formerly known as Anthony Bottom, a political prisoner since 1971, is arguing, has a case being argued in the Second Circuit. That is in Foley Square, the Second Circuit of the United States Court. It is located, I think, on the 27th floor, but I'm sure you'll find out that's easy enough. But it is the courthouse, not the state court, but the federal courthouse, and they are... Yeah. And once again, the lawyers, I must say I'd like to question them closely, but they said, please make sure that people are orderly. Excuse me. Anyway,
yes.
So Thursday, 10 o'clock, Foley Square, the Second Circus for Jaleel. He has asked that people show up for him. The second thing I want to remind people about is the UNAC convention, which is going to be held in Secaucus. UNAC is the only one out there now that stands for the fight against imperialism. Because black lives, and not only black lives in this country, but the lives of color in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in now in Yemen, and in all the places the United States has interfered and placed itself. So UNAC is having their convention in Secaucus, New Jersey. I believe it starts the weekend of May 5th. But you just look it up on UNAC, everybody, on your computers, and you'll find it. It's a most worthwhile, and as I say, if that is just an underlying current to everything else we do, is the fight against imperialism. So with that, I'm going to give another cough and sign off, and thanks, Ralph, and excellent opening. Thank you.
And thank you, Len, and as you reminded the lawyers, every gain we have made was unruly, and it wasn't peaceful. The Civil War was not peaceful, and as I reminded the board here in Orange, New Jersey, when we got the teacher back in the school, it was because we were very unruly in the streets and in the schools. And when we were able to fight for community control, can you imagine in New York and up to 1965, there were no principals of color, no contracts for people of color. You could not be a station engineer, missionary engineer, if you were a person of color, which only required a 10th grade education, and you could not deliver a newspaper. While there were a lot of unruly times to change that. And
well,
so,
someone, when I was, before I went to jail, someone gave me a T-shirt, Ralph, and that T-shirt said, "Uppity women make history." And I think uppity women and uppity men joined together could make a lot of history. And we won't talk about what uppity means to you and me. Good night.
So what is
to everybody.
Thank you, Lynn. Let us have the next caller, Mary. I think Dick is waiting there. Dick, are you with us this evening?
Yes, I am. I'm listening carefully and enjoyed both what you and Lynn had to say. I'm just thinking, though, I've been thinking this week, that we have to open the problem, the program, up to a different set of contributions. We want people to call in and tell us about the evils they see all around, because they are all around us everywhere. There's no community in the United States, let alone outside of it, that is exempt from those evils. The oppression by crazy rulers and people who are ruling us for their own advantage. There's no end to that. But we also have to have a little time. Oh, and we need time for people to tell us of important events so that everyone who's in the area can get together and participate in supporting the our comrades in justice who need our help. And believe me, I can tell you that when it comes to the court system, you don't ever want to be in there alone. You want people all around who show that they're with you. I remember many, many years ago, my nephew got hauled into court in White Plains, and I insisted that everyone in the family be there to let the judge and everybody else know that he was not alone. And that worked out very well in that case, because we showed a unified front of people who were determined. And that just holds in every case. We have to play the game of show. Let us show what the truth is. So that means, yes, we have to be out on the streets and protesting on every occasion that a protest is deserved. And we also have to consider what other tools we could use. Well, I think that some people should be calling in from their perspective in terms of what the solutions to these problems are. It's easy to describe the problems because there are a million cases. We all see them, and we can all talk about them, and that talk would go on endlessly. But somewhere, somebody's got to start talking about the solutions. And anybody who has any idea about how to solve these problems, that's part of the conversation, too. Let us know the ideas. Some of us will say, well, that's not a good idea. Here's a better one, and so on. And then we get into that controversy, you know, amongst ourselves, that discussion. But we can't just go out and have a purposeless revolution. We have to have a purposeful revolution, and we have to know what strategy and tactics we can use, and we have to use all the tactics at our disposal. And I am not among the people who say we should not participate in voting, because I say that while so long as our laws allow us to go to the polls and have a say, however trivial it is, we have to go and use that tool as a weapon. So we have to be prepared not only to be out there at presidential elections, but to be out every 2 years, because members of Congress are elected every 2 years, because a third of the Senate is elected every 2 years, because governors and everything are elected every 4 years, whatever, mayors on the odd years. We have to be prepared to vote in every election if our leaders can tell us the right way to vote. It isn't always the Democratic Party. It's almost always against the Republican Party, because they are the truly conspiratorial party. The Democrats are just incompetent, and they are confused between the few of them that understand what must be done and the many of them that don't understand and just want a piece of the pie too. So I'm not saying that either party is virtuous. What I'm saying is we've got to look at it shrewdly, and we've got to say, wait a minute, we should all vote this way, we should all have this referendum, we should all support the union here, we should all do this, we should do whatever it is, even though these people are not our allies, and even though we can criticize them, we have to vote for somebody in order to not to vote for somebody else and give that person power. That's exactly the whole conspiracy that the rich billionaires who support the Republican Party used against us. They went in and they took over the state houses. They took over the localities. They allowed people in Michigan to be controlled by, you know, basically evil people, and everywhere else in the country. And it's happening all over because the people don't participate, don't use this little bit of a tool that they have. I'm not going to say it's going to win the battle, but we have to have people who know where we're going. We have to have people who say, wait a minute, here's what we must do. Here are the policies we must advocate, and here are the policies we must deny loudly. And you can interpret loudly however you wish, but the point, it's all I'm trying to say is, it's a time that we've got to start talking about what are the possible solutions. What are the, especially now with the presidential election already underway. We hear Senators Rand Paul and Ted Cruz and Mario Rubio coming out and sounding like they're leftists, or sounding like they're liberals anyway. And in their introduction, you know, I'm going to run because I want to achieve this for society. I want to bring income equality and all of that. But they don't want to do that. Everything they've ever done in their history has been against that. So they, you know, they don't want to have any part of it. Anybody who is fooled by these people, by these Republicans, the Republican political machine is absolutely 100% controlled by the billionaire class, the 100%. They don't have the interests of anyone else, of 99% of the people. They don't have the interests of that 99%, in their hearts. That's not what they're striving for. Now, you will find occasionally a politician who is sincerely trying to do well, but doesn't know how to go about doing it. That's our responsibility, too. We have to educate them as to what they're doing wrong and what they have to do right. So we have to start thinking about solutions. Okay?
I'd like to cut into that and add to that. Solutions.
Okay.
Yes.
Sure.
We must have solutions, but we must look to what has worked before. Now, one of the very important thing about solutions is Reverend Pinckney, when he had a recall petition that was supported sufficiently. When you elect somebody based on what they say they're going to do, and when they do not do it, then recall is the only solution we have to this condition.
Yes,
and
absolutely. It's one, right? I agree with you, Ralph. Absolutely.
We know how important that is because they know how important it is, and because a date was changed, the claim was changed on two petitions, two names, the people went into court to say this is what they wanted to do, and they still put Reverend Pinckney in jail, and he's serving, as I said, 30 to 120 months on a petition.
Yeah.
The judge said they don't know who changed it, and it went. There was no record of who had that petition. petition, and I believe there were at least 10 people out there with getting petition signed. And so there was no chain of control, no chain of who had the petition, and, well, I could beat that to death. They know how important the recall is, and we can also look at our fellow Puerto Ricans who got all except one of their prisoners out of jail because no Puerto Rican or Latino politician could get elected if they didn't support their political prisoners. That's a lesson. This works.
Absolutely.
With the people who were fighting for gay rights, when they use their economic power to bring states to their knees, then they have rights. And so we see things that work that we must use. But let us go on to our next speaker. I think, Joel, are you out there? All right, Mary, open the board to allow people to come in at will.
Okay. Mr. Porner, I want you to know that I have it open except when I hear background noises. And we were getting quite a few background noises. I think that if you're using a cell phone, you have the capacity to hit the mute button yourself until you're ready to speak. And so I need to ask everyone to please do that. I'm going to open your boards again so that you can speak if you've not already spoken. And Mr. Pointer will call on you. We're so pleased to have every one of you with us tonight at Ralph Pointer, What's Happening. All phones are open now, so
hello,
please
Ralph.
Be careful.
Ralph.
Hello, Ralph.
I'm listening. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Dorothy Mackey. And I want to simply say that what I have recognized over the time of my life, which has been organized criminal trauma networks, and the disenfranchisement of selected individuals. Who are those people? Those are people who would not have been prejudiced. Those were people who would stand up for everyone. These are the people who, over the history of my life, have been selected based on their parents' ideology, in which they have commonly been brutalized sexually, physically, and psychologically, even through colleges. We now have rampant rapes in colleges, but they use what's called neuro-linguistic programming, which is a baseball bat, a figurative baseball bat of verbal trauma to keep these victims from totally coming out of being abused. In the military in the 1980s, and this is preceded prior to this time frame, but there was a huge ramp up of getting these selected individuals into our U.S. to Guantanamo Bay level torture using mind altering substances, gang rape, sexual slavery, where they were turned out to other people throughout our government and foreigners, as well as on the bases. Now, over the period of this time, I had a law enforcement degree, I watched it, I endured it, I went through it myself. I reported these crimes not fully understanding because of the drugs that were used to shatter and reshatter these victims. Many of these people are in very high levels of position and authority across this country throughout companies. We're talking all our military services, federal employees, their family members, spouses, and children learn to do this to people. These tactics were then used and have been used for over 23 years in our VAs, denying these victims any level of coming out of the abuse, the shattering. I was threatened before I left the military that if I ever share or recount what I went through, they will find a way to put me in jail. They destroyed my marriage. I would have a partner later on, and he died under suspicious causes. Repeatedly, I have been brutalized, and throughout multiple jobs, even though I have multiple advanced degrees, my life has been systematically shattered, brutalized, homes broken into, pets killed, evidence taken, denial of my benefits and claims, in which I was attacked in jobs, and retaliated against, which is the reason why so many of our veterans, good and decent people, are either driven to commit suicide, being suicided, which is a murder that looks like a suicide. They are driven into poverty.
Well, as Dick has told us, we know of many instances that have been covered up by the government of brutality in the services, and I think everyone is aware of the unraveling of the so-called mystery of black sites, and I think everyone is aware that the black sites started in America a long time ago.
Well, let me just wrap this up, because one of the things that's really very significant is in my life, not only did they use false memory syndrome psychiatrists, psychologists, and social workers to get these victims on drugs that are causing problems, prescriptions, but they're then labeling them as mentally ill when in fact they've been criminally violated. Their intention is to drive us and provoke us into becoming violent so that they have plausible deniability. They do multiple things. They do multiple things. They get rid of the good and decent groups that, had Dr. King have survived, would have been the group and the movement to change this garbage around. And they are allowing for the criminals to flourish. Thank you.
You're quite welcome. And next week, let us have a solution to this problem. Joel, are you there? I see you've called me several times before.
Yes, I am. I had lost the number temporarily, but I've recovered it now, obviously, and I'm on the phone.
Please, let us now hear your view.
Well, I was listening to the former speaker about this whole thing about voting and Republicans and Democrats and so on, and I think there is a difference between the two, but it's like the difference between a straight right to the face and a left hook to the jaw. And every election between those two is really asking the public, the average person, the working people, which one will you take, a straight right or a left hook? And the Democrats are a little bit different. They're a little bit sneakier, and they represent a different type of coalition. I remember one morning about maybe 15 years ago, there was a decision taking place in court. It was called the Kelo decision. Now, if people aren't familiar with that name, what it represented was an eminent domain case in which the government was seizing the property of small property owners and also the apartments of tenants and small retail stores in Fort Turnbull, which is part of New London, Connecticut. And they were giving this to Pfizer Chemical, allowing them to have the other properties condemned of these basically small middle-class businesses to turn it over to a monopoly like Pfizer Chemical for a song, with the taxpayers making up the difference. And as I listened, I was surprised when I learned that the opposition to such a thing came from the conservatives on the Supreme Court, the Rehnquist and with three other that were considered conservatives, and then the liberals all voted for it. And I forget her first name out, but somehow that slips my mind. But Judge O'Connor, who is normally a conservative judge on the swing list, wrote the decision She wrote an opposition decision, but was not able to carry the vote. The reason, now, the Democrats all justified it. They said, well, you know, that city is blighted, and Pfizer Chemical promises to give jobs to, they'll do minority hiring, number one, and number two, they'll do, they'll make affordable housing available. So the liberals jumped on this, same as they jump on a lot of justification issues, which have the same worm on the same book, you know, affordable housing and minority hiring. So they'll hire people, they promise to hire people from the community. Usually they renege on these promises. And in the end, what they've given a person, they've given some people a job of destroying a certain neighborhood and other people a job of rebuilding that neighborhood into a high-rent district or a condo district that they themselves could never live in. And very often, now what happened in New London is they never built the promised industrial park. They never hired anyone. There's no affordable housing that came down. But the liberals represent very often a coalition between the super rich at the top, the real blue blood, the Rockefeller banker level on the one hand, or the Pfizer level, for example, and they leading a coalition with the very poor who usually get cheated in the end by these kinds of promises. So the Democrats have a different and trickier policy. I just saw one of the more liberal Democratic columnists in the New York Times, Paul Krugman, and he was basically advocating voting for the Democrats and for Hillary. Now, in the article, he said, we don't know where Hillary is going to stand on issues like the Trans-Pacific Partnership, for example, which would create an international corporation government that would have veto power over any actual government in the world, and including the ability to override labor laws and environmental regulations inside a sovereign country. So he says, we don't know if she's going to stand on this. Nevertheless, she's better than the Republicans because she'll be for supposedly higher taxation of the rich and so on. And but if you don't know where she's going to stand on something like that, no matter what else she stands for, how could anyone of conscience even think of giving her your vote? It boggles the mind. And they work very closely together, the Democrats and Republicans. They have different constituencies, but they're basically selling the same system, which we have to get rid of, because otherwise it's going to get rid of all of us, or the overwhelming majority of us, in short time. It's destroying.
Well said, Joe. And I would hope that, if nothing else, voting for people who want to vote can be a lesson, a learning tree. For example, I know the euphoria that was felt in the black community, and I was not one of them, on this euphoria on the election of Obama. As a matter of fact, I was one of the people who opposed Obama on his first term by supporting Cynthia McKinney, and I opposed Obama on his second term. And so what we have to understand, and I think what you're saying, is America has the ability to put a black face on white imperialism, and now we understand what Obama has done, not what he said he was going to do, what he has done, and now we see the wealthy are going to try to put a feminist face on imperialism. But whatever face they put on imperialism, we have to understand it. Now, we as people of color have been burnt by Obama. And feminists who vote for Hillary Clinton are going to be burnt by Hillary Clinton. And maybe that will be lesson enough for us to form a party or to be in any party with those who have a purpose of making it better for all of us, those who think of America or the world as an inclusive place for people to survive. Because if we continue with this Democrat-Republican ping-pong game of election, there will be no world left to make better. They will destroy the water with fracking. They will destroy the air. And if we have adventurers like Obama and Hillary Clinton wanting to control the world, confronting other nations like Russia and China, they could end it all shortly. If European Union, NATO, wanting to put ballistic missiles in around Russia. That could cause a problem. And people don't seem to recognize or realize or care that Russia and China have signed a mutual defense agreement. Now, this defense agreement isn't against Nicaragua or Chile or any other small nation. It's against a superpower, America, and we are playing ping pong back and forth, allowing ourselves to be like a ping pong ball between the Democrats and the Republicans, and we don't seem to be learning the lesson that Joel was telling us. But let us hope that those who are involved in voting are learning. And through this education, if it happens soon enough, we will have an inclusive America that understands everyone's rights. Mary, do you have anyone else on the line now?
I'm on the line, Ralph. Larry Pinkney has been on the line for over an hour.
Okay, Larry, give us your thoughts.
Are you
Larry,
there, brother? Can you hear me?
I'm here listening. Give us your thoughts.
All right. Well, first of all, I want to point out that I'm with you on what you have said. And specifically, I'm going to delineate this from a point-by-point level. One, you know what? Get off this Democrat and Republican plantation. Get off of it. Stop the dumb stuff, all right? The Democrats and the Republicans are joined at the hip. So stop playing this dumb game of, oh, these guys are better. No, they're not better. You have, as Malcolm X said, you have the foxes and you have the wolves, all right? The Republicans are the wolves, the Democrats are the foxes, and they both want to eat you. Now, I am calling in support of Reverend Edward Pinkney, who today went to a hearing in Berrien County, Michigan, or as I call it, Berrien County, Mississippi, all right? And there were a number of motions. One of the motions was to make it clear to the court, which the court already knew, but to make it clear that the jury had been tampered with, that at least one of the jurors was working hand in glove with the prosecution and should never have been on the jury. Well, let me tell everybody today, here and now, that the judge, Schrock, dismissed that out of hand. Oh, that's no. Even though the evidence was there. And by the way, talking about attorneys, lawyers, talking about being orderly, screw orderly. Revolutions are not orderly. Change is not orderly. But let me I just want to make that real clear. The bottom line is that Reverend Pinkney's
so-called defense attorney did not even bother to call the private investigator who had a wealth of information to present. And his name is Tat Parrish, T-A-T-P-A-R-I-S-H. All right? Let's understand that. Because, you know, I don't give a zip what people say, but he's in the hands of Berrien County, Mississippi, or Michigan, take your choice. We need to understand that, and that's what I'm trying to get people to see. Reverend Pinckney is going to continue his fight. Oh, and by the way, let me be specific about they. The Judge Chirac, had the unmitigated audacity or the unmitigated cheek, as the British would say, to actually fine Reverend Pinckney, that's F-I-N-E, to fine him for having caused duress, for having engaged in his constitutional right to bring about a recall election, which the Mississippi fascists in Michigan quashed, okay, fined him over $1,700. Come on, people, wake up. Stop talking about Democrats and Republicans. When will you fools wake up? It's not about that. Both parties are the same. The only difference is one party talks to you about, well, we will just hang you and let you die slowly. And the other party says, we will shoot your ass right here and right now. They are both the same, as Brother Malcolm X said. Now, Reverend Edward Pinckney now moves on to the so-called appellate level, to appeal. But you see, we are in a very fascist, and I'm going to repeat that. I don't give a damn what my so-called leftist friends say. Oh, it's not fascism. It is fascism. Because the corporations and the government are one and the same. You know, and we need to understand that. Reverend Pinckney in Benton Harbor has been fighting for well over 10 years against the corporate domination and the racism of none other than Whirlpool Corporation. So what did Whirlpool do? Why, they picked a Negroidian. That's right, a Negroidian mayor, and they backed him, okay, surreptitiously backed him, made sure that he was the mayor, all right? And this is a Negroidian, a lackey, a stooge, of Whirlpool Corporation, and his name is James Hightower. Let me repeat that in case anybody misses it. James Hightower, and the court today ordered that Reverend Pinckney pay James Hightower, the lackey stooge, a Negroidian mayor of Benton Harbor, a lackey stooge of Whirlpool, pay him over $1,700. Now, come on, people, wake up. Hightower and his corporate backers, and most especially Whirlpool, are the perpetuators. Hightower, James Hightower, is nothing more than an Uncle Sambo. You know, people say Uncle Tom. That's not the right word. It's Uncle Sambo. Read Harriet Beecher Stowe's book, Uncle Tom's Cabin. He is an Uncle Sambo, a sellout, a scumbag, a non-human, if I may say. Okay? But he is backed by Whirlpool Corporation, who controls the courts, the judiciary, the police, the school system, everything. So people, please, wake up. Now, we are not deterred. I want to say that again. We are not deterred. I am the national spokesperson and the chair of the Central Coordinating Committee
for the freeing of Reverend Edward Pinckney. But it's not just about Reverend Edward Pinckney. Be clear about that. It's about what they, who's they? The corporate hegemony, the corporate domination. It's what they have planned for all of us, all right? They began in Michigan, whether it's Benton Harbor, and then Detroit, Michigan, and then Flint, Michigan. But you know what? It's happening in California. It's happening in New Jersey. It's happening in New York. It's happening in Oakland. I can go on and on. Y'all folks better wake up and understand that Reverend Edward Pinckney is simply a symbol, and a very important symbol, of the struggle that affects all of us, black, white, brown, red, and yellow. So I'm calling in with a great deal of passion right now, because, you know, I want folks to know what happened today in this so-called court system. It was nothing more than a lynching. Let me say that again. It was nothing more than a legalized political lynching. And we are not, we the people, everyday, ordinary, black, white, brown, red, and yellow people, we will not tolerate it. We must not tolerate it, because guess what? It's coming to your doorstep. So stand up. And Brother Ralph, let me just say this very quickly, as quickly as I can, that I want to go back to this Democrat-Republican Party nonsense. As W.E.B. Du Bois said many, many years ago, may God forgive us if we ever again vote for the Republicans and Democrats. And Democrats! So stop this nonsense, pretending that there's a lesser of evil. Evil is evil, and we need to deal with it systemically. This is a systemic problem, and we need to change it systemically. And that's what Reverend Edward Pinckney has been saying for a very long time. So I'm going to sign off. I'm going to give my name once again. My name is Larry Pinckney. I am the national spokesperson and the chair of national and international spokesperson and chair of the Central Coordinating Committee for the freeing of Reverend Edward Pinckney. Thank you, my brother. Thank you for putting up with my rant.
Thank you so very much for giving us this information, because you have covered every base. Reverend Pinckney talked about the problem. He talked about the solution. He was leading the boycott, which we are continuing against Whirlpool. And personally, it's not just every Wednesday that we should stop shopping. I shop for nothing that isn't food, shelter, or transportation. I need nothing else. No one else needs anything else. And unless we mean it, like the people supporting gay rights meant it, they made states back down within weeks, if not within days. But black lives and Reverend Pinckney's life does not matter. And we can tell, because we're not doing enough about it. Our political prisoners do not matter, because we are not doing enough about it. And I will repeat, in the words of Lynn Stewart, nothing has changed. They have just taken lynching from the streets to inside the courtroom and in the police departments of America. As any of the facts of people being shot and killed daily prove it. And so, yes, we must do something about it. We must recognize, as Larry has stated, and as Malcolm X has said so many times, we have been bamboozled by the system. And as political professors say, metaphysical imperialism. Well, we just know that metaphysical imperialism takes place when you believe a lie. We have to stop believing the lies and examining every position and doing something about it. And if there is time, I would like Mary to just grab someone at random who's been waiting to weigh in on this issue. Mary?
Yes, and, sir. I have 8672. The line is open for 8672. Have you gotten a chance to speak?
Hello?
8672. I also have, I'm going to just open all the lines and someone can speak. I want to say that my name is Mary Neal. I'm the station director here at Human Rights Demand. I wanted to tell you some things that Miss Betty Davis told me today. She said a Latino teacher named Marilyn Zuniga in Orange, New Jersey, the Board of Education has excommunicated her. And because she had her children in her classroom send a get well card to Mamiya. Also, Ms. Betty Davis wanted to point out that a Latino man helped the police officer murder a black man who was shot multiple times in his back as he ran. We all know about that case. I want to say that I'm very proud of GoFundMe, and I'm also very proud of Indiegogo, because both of those fundraising companies refused to allow themselves to be used to raise funds for the officer who shot this man in his back. Another thing is that a Latino man that, and she wanted to say that today is the 150th anniversary of the Appomattox battle. I may have said that wrong, but that's where General Lee was defeated. And after the Union Army won that battle, they finally believed that slaves had been freed. And also, I want you to know that persecution and prosecution against Ramsey Orr continues. He was released from Rikers Island after posting bond. Orr has endured persecution and prosecution since filming Eric Garner's death in New York. And I want to personally thank everyone who sent donations toward his fund. That $16,250 was raised, I understand it, by donations from people who united for victory and justice. I want you to know that a young man was shot and killed in November. He was shot in his back by police officers in Jackson, Tennessee. And to show you how far we have to go before even all black people unite around this slogan, Black Lives Matter, a church had a ceremony on Sunday, and they actually gave the police officer who shot this unarmed young black man in his back, they actually gave that police officer an award, a black church. So the clergy response team is alive and well in the United States, and they don't mind using churches against the people to give the wrong message. So this was a black police officer who took credit for shooting him. And on Sunday, he received an award, a citizenship award, from a black church right there in the small town of Jackson, Tennessee, where this unarmed 19 or 20-year-old black child with an excellent record, no police issues at all in his whole life, unarmed, he was shot in his back, and that officer got an award from the church. So that's some of my news.
Well, Mary, let us close out the program this evening, and thank you for that. The problem continues, and let us continue working on solutions. Thanks, everybody, for their this evening, and I look forward to speaking to everyone again next week. Good night, all.
Thank you, Mr. Pointer. Thank you, guests. Come again next Tuesday night at 9 p.m. for Ralph Corner what's happening. And please, if you need to email him, you can email him directly at ralphcornerwhatshappening@gmail.com. We appreciate your coming and hanging out with us tonight and discussing what's happening.
I wish I could share all the love that's in my heart.